Before we get into our review, I want to review some passages with you that we haven't gone through in a little while. Make sure that we've got these down pat, and then we'll get right into our study tonight. There is a passage, Katie, that tells me, by what authority doest thou these things, and who gave thee this authority? Where do I read that? All right, Matthew 21, 23 through 27. 23 through 27. Where do I read about Cain and Abel, David? All right, Hebrews 11, verse 4. But there's another one that I'm interested in from the Old Testament that introduces us to Cain and Abel. Where would that be? Fourth chapter of Genesis. Yes. Bruce, there's a passage that says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given unto me. Where is that? All authority in heaven and on earth. Anybody? 28:18. Yes, 18 through 20. There's a passage that says, there's a way that seemeth good, Rachel, unto a man, and the end thereof is death. Where is it? Seems right, but it isn't. Proverbs 14:12. Yes. Proverbs 16:25. That's the same one. Exactly right. Linda Cartaya. There's a, pardon me? Well, where do I read about Nadab and Abihu? Yes. Leviticus 10, 1 and 2. 10, 1 and 2. Jonathan Hines. There's a passage that says, whosoever goeth onward and abideth not in the doctrine of Christ hath not God. Where is it? 2 John 9. Yes. Amy. There's a passage that says, whate'er you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Where is it? Anybody on that pew, help her out. Who's got it?
Colossians
3:17. Thank you, Dick. There is a passage that says, why call you me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Chris, where is it? Luke 6:46. Betty Jo, I need a passage that tells me that we're not under the Old Testament covenant. Where would you start? There's a bunch of them. Just pick one. Okay, what books would there be? That's right. Galatians, Romans, and Hebrews, the three books that help us to understand our relationship to the law. Now then, Mr. Roy, I need a passage. Let's see. I need a passage that discusses King Saul. King Saul. That tells me that King Saul was instructed to go and smite the Amalekites, and he didn't do that. Do you remember where that is? Yes, sir. 1 Samuel, anybody help him with the chapter? 15. Good. Good. You did good. You did good. 1 Samuel 15. Randy, I want to know where I can turn to in a specific passage to find that we're not under the law of Moses. Galatians 2:21. What's it tell us? We're not under the law of Moses. I want to know more than that. Hebrews chapter 8, okay. That one tells us that we're not under the law. And why did that go off, Richard? Oh, I hadn't turned it on yet. I thought I had that up there. That's okay. Must have punched a button here.
Galatians
2:21.
All right. I nullify the grace of God, for his righteousness comes through the law, that Christ died needlessly.
All right, that's a good one to keep in mind. If we're under the law, then he died for nothing. All right, good. There are others, but that'll suffice for now. There is a passage that tells me that all things are lawful, but not all things are expedient, which tells me in order for something to be considered an expedient, it must first be lawful. I need to establish the passage. James, where is it?
1 Corinthians 10:23.
Very good. There are two passages that help me to understand that in the realm of expediencies, that a man's conscience has to be considered. And what would one of those be, Richard? Matter of conscience. Okay, you understand the question. Sometimes I don't ask the question quite right. There are two passages that discuss whether or not I respect a man's conscience. Romans 14 and 1 Corinthians 8, and we might add 1 Corinthians 10 to that as well. Okay, good. There's a passage that says that the things that are revealed belong to man, and the things that God did not reveal belong to God. Where would I find that? Bruce? Answers a lot of questions. Anybody? Yes, chapter and verse are the same. Deuteronomy 29:29. The things that are revealed belong to man. If it's not revealed, it belongs to God, so you don't have to worry about answering that question, okay? It's the answer to a lot of questions. God just hasn't said. And so we dare not speculate on the things that God has not addressed. All right? There's a passage that says that if any man speak, let him speak as it were the oracles of God. Where do I read that, Jonathan?
Four,
yes, 1 Peter 4, verse 11. Very good. All right, well, that's enough of that. Well, no, I've got at least two more questions. There's a passage that identifies local churches to operate independent and autonomously. I want to know at least one. Randy?
Independent churches.
I want to know at least one passage that tells us that local churches are autonomous. First Peter 5, 1 and 2.
Specifically about elders, not churches.
All right. All right. It tells elders to tend the flock, which is among you. And where?
Acts 20.
Acts 20, verse 28. Yes. Elders are to take heed to the flock over the which the Holy Spirit hath made them bishops. So that tells us that elders are limited in their oversight to the local church that appointed them. That kind of kicks in the head the idea of sponsoring churches or something other than autonomous churches. All right? And the other question that I had was pertaining to the social gospel. There's a passage that says, if any man is hungry, let him eat at home. Where is it? 1 Corinthians 11, 24 and 33. Well, all the way through 34, you could read that and have it all nailed down. All right, very good. Review. And this is the worksheets that you have. Question number one, define authority. Julie Grugowski, you look like you just came in and have no idea where. Define authority for me, Carolyn.
You've got to have permission from one who's in charge to, in order to be able to do anything, whether it's something of the world or something spiritual.
Okay. So that means then permission to act. Okay. Sorry, Julie, I'm just picking on you. Permission to act. Number two, how did the chief priest and the elders of the Jews express that they recognized the need of authority and that that authority must be from the right source? Peggy?
Well, we can go to Matthew 21:23-27, when they asked Jesus, by what authority doest thou these things, and who gave it you? This
All right.
Authority.
The question they asked was appropriate. It was a good question. And Jesus' response to it, how did he respond to it, Rachel? You remember? That's exactly right. And the choices were? That's right. It came from heaven or it came from man. Only two possibilities. Let's see. Katie, I picked on you. Emily, pick on you. Name some Old Testament examples which illustrate the need for divine authority. Just give me one. Old Testament examples. We talked about some of these at some length.
Would that be like with the strange
Yes, it would. Now, who were the characters involved in that?
Was that made out of the
Bible? It was. And what passage would I read to find that? You're thinking, when's he going to quit? Where was it?
Leviticus 10.
You get an A+. You did good. Leviticus 10. All right, somebody start me down another trail with somebody else. David? All right, the man's name?
Uzziah.
Was it? No. It was. You said it. Say that again.
Uzziah.
Uzziah. I thought you said Saul. I didn't hear. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's 1 Samuel 15. Very, very good. Bruce, give me another one. All right, Samuel and Saul. All right, very good. Name two possibilities or two possible sources of authority. Sarah, two possible sources. All right, from heaven or from man. That's the only two possibilities. Number five, name three New Testament references that teach the need for authority. Three New Testament examples that teach the need. Now, we were just studying some Old Testament examples, but we want to look at some New Testament examples. Who wants to talk to me? James?
I guess I can. Well, number one, Matthew 21:23-27.
All right.
Colossians 3:17.
All right, that works.
And we can use 2 John 9-11.
All right, that works. Anybody have any additional ones?
2 Thessalonians 2:15,
yes. Peggy?
Luke 6:46.
Very good. Luke 6:46. Why call you me Lord, Lord? Yes. Bruce?
1 Corinthians 15:24.
I didn't hear the last part.
1 Corinthians 15:24.
Okay. Then cometh the end. Okay. All right. That would help us to see there is a day of accountability. Yes. Anybody have anything else? 2 John 9, yes, through 11. That's right. That'll work.
You can use examples there too, right? Peter.
You could.
Yes,
yes, that'll work. It helps us to see that the Lord becomes the authority, not Moses and Elijah.
Chapter 1:1-3.
Yes, not the Old Testament, but it's God speaks to us through Christ. And you folks are thinking, good, this is what it's about. Number six, why are we not bound by the doctrine or practices of the Old Testament? Now this hits David on the very thing you just mentioned, Matthew 17. Let's talk about it. Why are we not bound by the practices of the Old Testament? God speaks to us now through Christ. He doesn't speak to us through the Old Covenant. Hebrews 1. 1, 2, and 3, yes.
Matthew 17,
the transfiguration scene, yes. Matthew 28:18, Christ has all authority, not the Old Covenant. That's right.
Colossians 2:14,
that's right. Nailed to the cross. Yes, same thing. That's been done away.
2 Corinthians 3:14,
yes. That one helps us to see that the old and new is contrasted in that whole chapter, 2 Corinthians 3. Very good. Anybody have anything else? This is good.
Romans 5:15.
Okay, I forgot. That's right. That's right. Can't be accomplished by the old covenant. Very, very good. Number seven, explain why getting results is not sufficient authority for a practice. Just because it seems to work doesn't necessarily make it right, and we want to explain that. Who wants the question? David?
We're talking expedience. It has to be lawful, and it has to be what God said. Otherwise, if it's not lawful or what God said, then just to make something work,
all right, all right. Now we've got an Old Testament illustration that involved the death of a man. What they were doing was getting results, but it caused a man to die. Uzzah, yes. They were transporting the Ark of the Covenant. How were they transporting it? On a cart pulled by two milk cows. Yes, and was it getting results? Was it moving the Ark?
Yeah.
But when Uzzah reached up and touched it, what happened to him?
He
fell dead. Now, how do we know what caused Uzzah to die? David tells us, but what was it? It wasn't the priests that were transporting the Ark. That's right. The priests were to transport it on staves on their shoulders. Uzzah was not a priest, and they were not transporting it properly to begin with. But yet, it was getting results until Uzzah reached up and touched it. Now, just because it gets results doesn't make it right. Okay? Now, pardon me?
He was the king also.
David was, yes. And he
came into the temple?
No, you're thinking of Uzziah. Two different characters, Uzzah and Uzziah. Okay? Randy.
In the context of our study.
Pardon me?
In the context of our study, the results are already revealed. And the way to achieve the results is also revealed.
True.
So we need authority.
That's right.
To achieve it the way it's supposed to be.
That's right. That's right.
We can pack the house. We serve pizza.
Yeah. Gets results, doesn't it?
That's results. You got a lot of people here that hear the gospel. Right?
Yeah.
We finish the pizza.
But the problem is it isn't authorized.
Well,
and that's right.
I don't know if we covered this one. This is one that's in my mind because we've been going over the timeline from creation in the back of the kids. The Tower of Babel, they were trying to find their own way to heaven. They had no authority to build this tower.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's right. Yeah, that works. Yeah, they had no authority to build a tower to heaven. And so consequently, God smote them with different languages, scattered them out so they couldn't finish that. That's right. Any other comments or questions? All right. The next question I have is, what requirements must be considered before a thing can be expedient? There are a number of things that qualifies something as an expedient. Number one, must be lawful. And we got a passage that goes with that.
1 Corinthians 6:12.
All right, 1 Corinthians 6:12. I was looking at my notes and it said 1 Corinthians 10:23, but you're right. Both of them were. Another qualification.
Must.
All right, let's hold that one. No, that's right. If it's specified, either by a direct statement approved and so forth, we'll talk about those more in a moment. But if it's specified, it cannot be considered an expedient. An expedient involves a choice. And if God has specified a thing, then that takes it outside the realm of choice. So it's not an expedient. That's right, Peggy. You did good. Okay? And Peggy, you told me...
basically the same thing she did.
Okay. All right. And there's another qualifying element. It must be lawful. It cannot be specific. It must, did you say edify? Okay, that's correct. And then number four. We were talking about that just a minute ago. If it offends a brother's conscience, it cannot be expedient. If it's an expedient, it edifies. If it offends a brother's conscience, it tears down. So it doesn't edify. So if it offends a brother's conscience, it cannot be considered as an expedient. I got one more. One more is it cannot be an addition or a substitution. If it adds to or substitutes for, it is not expedient. Now, I'll list these and then we'll talk about it. Number one, it must first be lawful. 1 Corinthians 10:23. It cannot be specified. And we could offer as an illustration Genesis 6 and the building of the Ark of Gopher Wood. It must edify. 1 Corinthians 10:23, 1 Corinthians 14:26. It cannot offend the conscience of a brother. Now these are passages that we've just mentioned. Romans the 14th chapter and 1 Corinthians the 10th chapter. And then finally, it cannot be an addition or a substitution. The reason that I put that into the list is there are many who consider instrumental music as an expedient. But rather than to be an expedient, it is an addition. It doesn't aid. An expedient is in the realm of things that aid. But an addition is different. It is not an aid. All right? Any questions or comments? I want us to see these things clearly. This will be the last time for a while we'll pass over this information. So if you've got a question or it doesn't seem clear to you, now's the time. Yes, Roy?
You mentioned it can't be specific. That made sense for a second, but I want to make sure I understood.
You lost it? Okay. When Noah was instructed to build the ark out of gopher wood, it was specified to him the kind of wood. He couldn't reason and say, well, hickory is a good flexible wood. I'll build the frame out of it and claim that it's expedient to build the frame out of hickory. God specified the kind of wood. That took it outside the realm of choice. That help? Good deal. Good deal. Number 9, explain and offer examples of how a practice is authorized. Explain and offer examples of how a practice is authorized. Now, when we talk about how a practice is authorized, we've got three things in front of us. Peggy, number one.
Direct command.
Direct command. I need an illustration. How would we illustrate a direct commandment?
Well, Acts 2:38.
Yes, Acts 2:38. When they asked the question, what shall we do? Peter said, repent ye and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of your sins. That's a direct command. Anybody else have another illustration?
Go into all the world and preach the gospel.
Go into all the world, preach the gospel. That's a direct statement. And then a second way of something being authorized is, Amy? We've got direct statement and then... Well, not what I'm looking for. Somebody help her out. A necessary inference. All right, let's talk about a necessary inference. What is that?
It's a forced conclusion.
A forced conclusion. A conclusion that I must come to, and let's underscore the little word a. A forced conclusion. We're not talking about multiple conclusions. A forced conclusion. That is, when we boil it down, there's only one possible conclusion that I can come to. That is a necessary inference or a forced conclusion. Now, we're not talking about something as inferred. We're talking about it being necessarily inferred, and there's a difference. A single forced conclusion. Now, I need some illustrations of that. Matthew 3, go with it. All right. All right, it is necessarily inferred that he went down into the water. That's right. You can't come up out of the water unless you first go down into it. That's right. Did Jesus ever utilize the means of necessary inference in order to teach anything? Now, you know when I ask the question that there's probably a probability that... yeah. Now, he did. He surely did. Now, I'm looking for the passage. Where did Jesus utilize the means of necessary inference to teach a lesson? Jonathan? All right, and so what's the lesson he's teaching on the... All right, there is a resurrection. The lesson is there is a resurrection. Now, you remember the passage where that's taught? You knew I was going to ask that.
Can you use Matthew 21, 23 in that one?
You could use Matthew 22. Yeah, Matthew 22 would suit better. But yeah, Matthew chapter 22. All right. 23 through 33. Matthew 22, 23 through 33. Now then, show how all of these are illustrated in the Lord's Supper. The Lord's Supper helps us a great deal to illustrate how divine authority is established. Who wants the first part of that?
I'll take it.
All right.
Direct command, do this in remembrance of me.
Excellent. Second part, James.
Well, that would be... What day of the week? In Acts chapter 20, verse 7 gives you that. On the first day of the week, they came together.
And how does that constitute any authority?
Well, that's an approved apostolic example.
That's the answer I'm looking for. That's exactly right. All right. And then the third means, illustrated in the Lord's Supper. Carolyn?
Necessarily inferred that the first day means each first day, and in Exodus 20 we have an example of various festivals and, or feasts, and you know, if it's the second day of the first month, then it's each year on that day. So
okay. All right. Very, very good. You guys are doing excellent on these. I'm so pleased. Number 10, name and illustrate two kinds of authority. Two kinds of authority. Who said that? They're good. Generic and specific. That's exactly right. Just exactly what I was looking for. Now I want to illustrate it. Generic authority. Peggy? Okay. Didn't tell him what tools.
What tools. However, specifically, he had to build it out of gopher wood.
All right.
He had to build it within the dimensions
all right.
that God gave him.
All right. So it was generic in respect to the tools necessary, but specific in reference to the kind of wood and dimensions.
What, New Testament example?
It'll be fine.
I figured that was the next question.
Oh, that's okay. Go with it. Okay.
28:18.
28, beginning at verse 18. Also Mark 16. And then what you said? You said Matthew, but you meant Mark.
We knew you meant Mark.
Yeah, I knew you meant Mark.
Going into all the world, he didn't say how to go.
No.
Said go, so that's generic authority. We can go any way we want to.
All right.
But
now,
what we preach is specified. That's the gospel. We don't
that was my next question. Yeah, that's right. No, we don't go into all the world and preach pizza, do we? We preach the gospel. We preach the gospel. Very good. We also find that illustrated. I've got to throw this out because of some controversy that we get into and we discuss these things with people. Singing versus playing. God specified the kind of music. We're to sing, not play. He didn't say anything about playing. He didn't say not to play, but he didn't say to play. And so that's the issue. He specified the kind of music. Number 11. Does the silence of the Scriptures authorize anything? Daryl, can we operate on the silence of God?
Well, yeah, if you consider not doing something which is true.
Well, will he be pleased with that?
No, I mean, to not do something is we're in the act of doing. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't have any idea.
We act by abstaining.
Okay, all right, all right. But when God is silent about something, does that then tell us to go ahead and do it?
Well, no, but that's what I meant.
I understand. I do understand now. Okay. All right, David? All right, correct. Correct. Silence doesn't grant permission.
Well, there's two passages that we could put with that.
All right, let's do it.
Leviticus 10, 1 and 2.
Okay.
God was silent about where not to get the fire, but they knew where to get it from.
All right.
The scripture tells us that. I think that's Leviticus 16 or 17.
16, yes.
And also in Hebrews 7:14, we understand that Moses spake nothing concerning priests from the tribe of Judah.
Very good. Very good. That's found where?
Hebrews 7:14.
7:14. Yeah, write that in your notes. That's good. We want to remember that. Hebrews 7:14. Question number 12. Question number 12. What is the difference between an aid and an addition? Bruce?
An aid is that which helps, and such as songbooks, and an addition is that which changes the scriptures.
All right. An aid facilitates in carrying out what it says. In addition, changes the commandment. It changes the thing that's authorized. That's right. It changes it into something else. All right, number 13. What are the works of the church? Specifically, there are three categories that we've talked about. Julie, give me one.
Evangelism.
Evangelism. And another one, Carolyn.
To build up or edify the body.
Edification. And give me another one, Peggy.
Benevolence.
Benevolence, yes. Number 14, what organizational structure has the Lord given to His church? What is the organizational structure of the church, Richard?
Philippians 1:1.
Okay, that's the passage, and what is the organizational structure?
He's given us
elders, elders, deacons, and saints.
That's right. Elders, deacons, and saints. And that's the passage you want to remember. Yes.
And the head.
And the head. And the head, even Christ. That's right.
Elders, deacons, and saints only locally.
That's right.
Right.
The local organization of the church. Yes. Number 15. Is it scriptural for churches to pool or centralize their funds into the treasury of one church, commonly known as a sponsoring church, and allow that one church and its elders to direct a general work of benevolence for all the churches? Now, answer it and then explain your answer. So whoever's grabbing onto that, who wants it? Julie? All right.
So we don't have the authority to, the elders here don't have the authority to oversee other churches.
All right.
To be responsible for the local body.
Very good. Very good. Anything to add to that? Randy and then Peggy.
The way the question is written, in order for something to be scriptural, it has to be found in Scripture.
That's a given.
Yeah. Therefore, the answer is no.
Yeah. Not there, is it? Now, you just explained your answer, didn't you? Okay. Peggy?
Okay, the other, well, only thing that I would add to what has been said is that we don't find an example of such a pattern anywhere.
All right, there is no pattern
so,
for such can't practice. Do can't do it. No, can't do it. All right, question number 16. Preaching the gospel is the major work of the church, and I, by the way, I want to comment on that. Those of you that were in recent men's meeting saw that that is the major work of this church as far as our finances are concerned. That's what we spent, I forget the percentage, Chris, you might remember that, but about 85% of the resources go to the preaching of the gospel. But preaching the gospel is the major work of the church. The church may support a gospel preacher at home or one who is preaching in other areas. Show how churches in New Testament days did this work. Draw a diagram to illustrate the pattern and that which is not in the pattern. Be sure to use passages in your answer. Now, if I was in a classroom back at the back, I'd pick on somebody and say, now go to the board and draw this thing out for me. But I suppose the best way that we can do that at this point is to simply note the passages, and you can picture that in your head. But I'm going to ask you, let's see, who do I want to ask? Jonathan, start me out. A local church may support the preacher that is among them. Where's the passage that teaches that?
2 Corinthians 8.
Okay.
2 Corinthians 8:1-8, where Paul said that he and Barnabas could have lived from it, but
okay.
Later on.
Okay. All right, there's another passage that also we want to add to that list where Paul said that a local church or that a local preacher, it is ordained that he be supported of the gospel. Where is that?
1 Corinthians 9:14.
These two go together, 2 Corinthians 8 and 1 Corinthians 9:14. Now, yes. That's the one. You don't put a muzzle on the ox while he's plowing. That's right. Very good. All right. Now, to illustrate another point in the pattern, several churches may send to one preacher in another location. Several churches may send to one preacher in another location. Now, there's another element we'll talk about. But several churches sending to one preacher. Where would I begin to read about that? Several churches sending to one preacher. 2 Corinthians 11:8-9. Paul said, I robbed other churches, taking wages of them, that I might minister unto you. I robbed other churches. Now, let's turn the thing around where we have one church sending to one preacher. Not among them. He's sending somewhere else.
Philippians 4.
4:15-16, 14-16. Yeah, Philippians 4. Philippians 1:3-5, Paul called that fellowship in the gospel. Okay? So we've got one church supporting a local preacher among them. Passage. 1 Corinthians 9:14, 2 Corinthians 8:1 through 5. We've got a preacher supported by a church. Philippians 1, Philippians 4. We've got a preacher supported by several churches. 2 Corinthians 11, verses 8 and 9. All right? Now our next question. Well, there it is. Circles drawn and everything. And of course, this right here is what you don't see. Pointed at it, the screen.
Well done.
Let's point at this screen up here. This is what we don't see in the pattern, the missionary society or the sponsoring church kind of arrangement. All right, number 17. Oh, by the way, I left one off up here that I did want to talk with you about. 1 Timothy 3, verse 15. This is a passage you want to remember because it tells us that the local churches have a responsibility in the realm of evangelism. It tells us by definition that that's what the church is. It is the pillar and ground of the truth. That needs to be in your list of passages to remember. Okay?
1 Timothy 3:15.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did
it get all the way down?
No, it doesn't. Yes. Yes, it does. It says that. Okay.
Oh, sure, it says that.
Yeah, that's where you messed up, is on the left-hand page, left-hand column, about two-thirds of the way down the page. Well, it is, James. You look in yours and see if that's not so. Right there, the one you got in front of you. All right. Number 17. In the New Testament, we read of the church engaging in the work of benevolence. Name the passages involved in the instances identified below and draw the diagram to illustrate the pattern and that which is not in the pattern. Now, I've tried to get this set up in a way so that you know what is and what is not, because sometimes we have to answer that in that way. And here's the pattern. And this is what I want you to be sure you know how to associate the passages with. One church supporting the needy, the destitute, among themselves. Where are the passages? Acts 2, 4, and 6. Everybody has that? All right. One church supporting several churches where there was indigent members caused by famine. Acts 11. The sending church was
Antioch.
Which Antioch? I'm getting picky now. Antioch of Syria. There were two. There was one Antioch of Pisidia. This was Antioch of Syria that sent to the needy brethren among the brethren in the province of Judea. Yes.
Which Antioch was it when they were first called Christian?
Antioch of Syria. Yes. Acts 11.
Right here.
Yeah, Acts 11. All right, there was something else I was going to ask you pertaining to that. It'll come to me next time around, maybe. Several churches, or one church sending to several churches. Now we want to do several churches sending to one church. And you see these on the board, and I'm going to ask you some specifics about them. When we read about the church in Corinth, Paul writes them from where? In the 1 Corinthian letter. Ephesus. He's writing from Ephesus. He travels on up into Macedonia, where he writes the 2 Corinthian letter. Who does he meet there? He's interested in a report. He meets Titus. He meets Titus in Macedonia. They, with the brethren from Macedonia, travel on down into Corinth, where a collection is obviously found. That's been the admonition. And from Corinth, the book of Romans is written. And in Romans, the 15th chapter, verse 25, we find that Paul is on his way to deliver these funds to the brethren that are in Jerusalem. Now, let's not get confused. This particular collection was sent by churches to the brethren in Jerusalem. Previously, we looked at the church at Antioch sending to brethren that dwelt in Judea, sending it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Now, my question is, Were there multiple churches in Judea? And if so, how do we know?
Yes, Galatians 1 about verse 16 tells us that.
All right, Galatians 1 about verse
22,
I believe it is, James. Galatians 1 verse 22 speaks of the churches of Judea. Now we know that Paul and Barnabas did not visit just one church and then allow that one to become a sponsoring church. How do we know that, Carolyn? Right. Exactly right.
You give an example, if you have a day where you go a bunch of different places, you return from the last place, that doesn't mean you stop a bunch of other places.
All right. Very good. Very good. You guys are just doing great on these. I'm pleased. Another question. Oh, I forgot that one. When one church sent to another church, what was always the reason that there might be equality? Equality in what respect, though, Randy?
Meeting the needs.
All right. All right. That every church saw to it that the needs of the members were supplied. Relief or equality in respect of need. That's right. Okay, let me catch up on my notes here. Next question. Number 18. What I already asked that one. Number 19. What must an individual do that the church must not do? I hope you thought about that. What must an individual do that the church must not do? All right. Engage in some profitable business enterprise to support their families. That's right, Bruce. That's right. And we gave the illustration of owning a cattle farm. You can do that, Bruce. You can raise cattle for profit, but the church must not do that. But you must engage in some profitable business enterprise. Bruce the welder, can the church operate a welding business? No, we can't do that, but Bruce can. Okay. Number 20. Can the church buy services from a business without subsidizing it or being responsible for the success or failure of that business? Sure we can. We could buy somebody to put a roof on the classrooms back here without supporting a roofer, but now that we've... Well, we just did, and now it leaks. We didn't have a leak before that, but now we do. So we're going to have to contact the roofers. All right, true or false? Well, I'm not going to do that. Let me just blank that. True or false? The Bible, it is. The Bible does not give authority for a building in which to worship. Is that true or false? The Bible does not give authority for a building in which to worship. Is that true or is that statement false? That statement's false. That statement is false. The Bible does not give authority for a building in which to worship. No, the Bible does. So the statement is false. Yeah. Don't you love true-false questions? Got to read them carefully. Yeah, Hebrews 10:25 is the passage. You cannot assemble without a place, can you, Carolyn? Got to have a place. Number 2, specific authority restricts one to what is specified and excludes everything else. Richard, is that a true or a false statement?
From what I heard of it, I would say true.
That is true, yes. That is true. Number 3, Betty Jo, we have no authority for a baptistry in which to baptize believers. Is that true or false? That's false. Number 4, Chris, the work of the church does not include secular education. Is that a true statement? That is true. Number 5, in the New Testament times, I didn't word that very well, in New Testament times, one church never sent money to another church to enable the receiving church to preach the gospel. Is that true or false? That's true. That is true. Number 6, the church may sponsor various recreational activities if the elders approve of such and feel that such activities will help the local church. Is that true or false? That's very false. All right. Number 7. In New Testament times, there was no organization larger than the local church and none smaller than the local church. Now, I should add to that, through which churches did its work. Is that true or false? That's true. Number 8. By the way, if you have a question, and I'm looking at my notes, just yell and I'll stop for a moment. Number 8, elders of one congregation may oversee a brotherhood project if the contributing churches favor the work being done and desire to participate. Is that true or false?
False.
Very false. Randy?
I just had a comment about the previous question.
All right.
Number 7, no organization larger than the local church, and that's one of them, the church universal is referenced.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's why I said I should have added to that, through which the church did its work. See, we don't activate the church universal. It exists, but it doesn't have a common work through which to do. So you may want to add that on. I did in my notes. Number 9. By necessary inference, we are taught to meet every Sunday to worship. Carolyn?
True.
That is true. Number 10, the scriptures teach that one church may send funds to another church in order for the receiving church to send funds on to a third church. James? That's very false. Number 11, God's pattern is violated when one church sends to another church for any other purpose than to relieve the needs of the receiving church. David? That's true. That's true.
No. Who is preaching at a church?
Okay.
Would a church send to a church so they can pay? Okay.
No.
Straighten that out.
No. The preaching congregation, or the preacher who is preaching, has a responsibility to the sending congregation. For example, in Acts chapter 13, when Paul is sent out by the brethren at Antioch, when he comes back in Acts chapter 14, he reports to them. He's responsible to them for the work they're supporting him to do. If a church sends to another local church, and that local church then in turn hires the preacher, let me illustrate my point that I'm trying to get across. If we wanted to send Randy to Bearwalla, Kentucky to preach the gospel, could we do that?
Sure.
Sure we could. We could do that. Let's suppose that in Bearwalla, Kentucky, there is a Catholic church. We want Randy to go there and preach against the errors of Catholicism. Can we do that? All right, let's say we want to send with Randy some printed materials that might be useful. Can we purchase the printed materials and send them with Randy? All right, can we send the money to the Catholic Church and let them get their own preacher? Now, what's the difference?
Control.
That answers your question. The sending church can send the preacher. The sending church can send materials to the preacher. The sending church cannot send to another church and they support the preacher, because then the sending church loses control. They're not in control of their own work.
On our board in the back, there's several preachers that receive support, but they're not under the under their elders, that they're local?
They are.
Church?
They are. But if they are preaching or teaching something that's contrary to the truth, we can cut them off. The communication is directly with the churches, the sending churches, and the preacher. That's why those are back there. They're reporting to us regarding the work that they are doing. And as far as our work is concerned, we have some say in what's being preached. If we just sent the money, we wouldn't have any say in what's being preached.
Do we have to say that we could correct the man, or do we have to say that we would cut off the funds?
Either one. That's where the control issue comes into play. We would have control of our own work. We wouldn't be surrendering that oversight to anyone else.
Even the elders of that?
No, we won't surrender our work to any other elders. That's the sponsoring eldership arrangement.
But if he's receiving support, though, maybe some from that local group and maybe some from another church.
Well, he'd answer to everybody that's sending it to him. Yeah. Yeah, but and that's a good question. I've been asked that a number of times. And the way I try to answer it is the illustration of the Catholic Church. You lose the control of what's being taught when you send the money to somebody else and let them teach it. Let them select the teacher. Let them select what's being taught.
So if a church sends to a church, that's for relief.
That's exactly right. That's right. And that was the only reason it was ever done.
It's for preaching the gospel.
That's right. And while we're on that note, some brethren are doing this, and I believe it's wrong. Some brethren as a local church, are sending to a preacher who then has the authority to distribute the funds in a region or a country at their will among those who have benevolent needs. I believe that's a violation of the pattern. You've created a one-man benevolent society is what you've done. Okay? Those are good questions. Okay? We'll stop with that.